Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I am an editor here at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as he always does, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Hey, Chris Paulette, why do you always introduce me second?
Because otherwise I'd be going, hi, and...
Jonathan Strickland's here, and I'm Chris Paulette.
Yes.
I had a listener ask why I was always listed second, and it's just because we kind of settled on this routine, and once you get a routine, it makes you feel nice and comfortable. You don't really want to leave that.
Yes. And so, when I tried just a minute ago, I got lots and lots of giggles.
Yeah, because it just didn't work. Rest assured, faithful listeners, I am not offended or hurt in any way that I am listed second. The fact that I pretty much chatter all over Chris whenever he tries to say anything, I think he needs top billing.
Oh, please.
All right, so let's get into the topic.
Yes, we should.
Yes, we will. What we're going to talk about today comes to us courtesy of a little listener mail. This listener mail comes from Jackie, and Jackie had a nice mail message. It was fairly long, so I'm just going to cut it to the chase here, and says, I had a topic that I was wondering about. How does the Wii Remote actually work? I know it has something to do with the sensor, but that's it. Looking ahead to future podcasts, I can't see any that appear to cover this topic and think that it would make an interesting podcast. Jackie, we agree, so we're going to talk about how the Wii Remote works. And we've talked a little bit about the Wii Remote in the past when we were chatting about the, you know, the different video game interfaces. But we really wanted to dig in and talk about what it is that makes the Wii Remote tick, how it works, and kind of some of the neat things that people are doing with the Wii Remote that perhaps Nintendo didn't really intend.
Yeah, that's it's funny because the pieces that make up the Wii Remote, actually one of the things that people talked about a lot when the Nintendo Wii first hit the shelves was the fact that, you know, people who were detracting from the machine said, well, you know, they didn't use any of the high-tech custom cutting-edge components that some of the other manufacturers used. But that sort of works in, well, it works in Nintendo's favor in one regard because it keeps the cost of the console down.
Exactly.
But, as it turns out, these components are also, prized by hackers, people who like to take stuff apart and do other things with it. I've seen many projects, cataloged in the pages of Make Magazine and YouTube and some of the other places where people have messed around with it. And it's really, the Wii Remote is a hodgepodge of different parts, that basically take your movements and interpret them in a way that the console can understand and allow you to play the games.
Right. So let's kind of talk about the different parts that are inside your Wii Remote, assuming you have one.
Okay.
All right. So if you were to take your Wii Remote apart, here's where we say, do not take your Wii Remote apart. People have done this for you. You don't need to do it yourself. And if you do do it, chances are you won't get it back together again.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were to take it apart, first you would notice that it's held together by some pretty wacky screws.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The screws are proprietary. It's a Nintendo design. And it's designed in such a way, it's kind of this weird sort of triangular three-prong thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's designed in such a way so that it is not easy to remove those screws, although you can find screwdrivers out there, especially for Nintendo repair kits, that do have the right head on the screwdriver so mm-hmm. that you can remove them. It's held together by about four screws and a couple of clips, and once you get that apart, that's it. That's the only thing holding this dilly-bob together. And we're talking about the main Wii Remote here, not the Nunchuck or anything like that.
Right, not the Motion Plus.
Right, not the Motion Plus either, right. So once you get that apart, you would be essentially looking at a plastic casing, two halves of a plastic casing.
Yes.
And a circuit board with lots of little, you know, microprocessors attached to it. You'd see a speaker there. You'd see some buttons.
Yes.
You would also see a little motor that would be attached to the upper side of the Wii Remote.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That motor, I'll just get that out of the way first. That's pretty simple. That's the motor that creates the rumble feel that you get whenever you have one of those the force feedback moments.
Yeah, it's similar to the kind that you'd find in a cell phone,
right?
That you use for the vibrate mode.
Yeah, it's essentially a little off-center rotating cylinder in there that rotates, and that's what causes the rumble motion. And it pretty much just has an on and an off mode. That's about it. Though you can make it feel like more of a vibration sensation if you turn it on and off at certain frequencies.
Mm-hmm.
That can actually make it feel like it's a more intense or less intense rumbling. But like we said, it's a bit. It's a binary function. It's either a zero or a one, on or off.
Yep. Jonathan and I when we were doing research for this, we found a great article in the IEEE's Pervasive Technology magazine from Johnny Chung Lee. I can highly recommend it if you're really interested in hacking this. But this is where we found a lot of our information, and he gets into lots and lots of detail. He was a doctoral student at Carnegie Mellon University and is now part of Microsoft's team, I believe. He has a pretty cool blog out there too.
Mm-hmm.
We got some really, really good details on this. And should we get into the individual components?
Yeah,
you want to talk about
that.
Those?
Yeah.
You know, the first thing, you know, a lot of people think about is that three-axis accelerometer that's inside the machine. And,
right. Analog Devices is the company that created that.
Yep. Yep. And basically, you'd find these in all kinds of other technologies, too. They're pretty common these days.
Yeah, they're
cell
getting
phones
more and more common
and
lots of things. Yeah.
You know, the iPod and iPhone and iPad.
These are the sort of sensors that allow the devices to know which way they are oriented. So, like, for instance, an iPhone or an iPod Touch, it would tell it that it's, whether it's in landscape or portrait mode.
Mm-hmm.
So the screen would flip accordingly. Same sort of thing, except in this case, the accelerometer is helping the Wii, figure out what the orientation is of the Wii Remote itself. So the pitch, the yaw, the roll, as you move it around, this is yaw.
I love that word.
It's one of the, this is one of the ways that the Wii detects how you're holding the Wiimote and thus can interpret your actions within a game or, you know, a menu system or whatever. It's just one of the ways, but it's the one that got a lot of press early on. And I read one review where it was kind of interesting, where they're talking about taking apart the Wii remote and finding just a tiny bit of disappointment that there weren't actual tiny little gyroscopes in there to indicate the because gyroscope is a good old way of figuring out the orientation of a of any sort of surface, right? I mean, that's kind of what NASA uses in a lot of its the early spacecraft were gyroscopes to be able to make adjustments to the pitch and yaw. But no, this is just a little electronic chip that essentially does the same thing. It uses it detects different changes in fields. So, but there is no actual little moving gyroscope inside your Wii remote.
Yeah, no gyroscopes, no jacks, no Tinker Toys. You know,
no.
Sorry, I got off track there. But there is an IR camera, an infrared camera, manufactured by PixArt Imaging, that's got a multi-object tracking engine in it. It can keep track of four simultaneous infrared light sources.
Yeah, now this is what allows you to do lots of really cool hacking tricks, which we'll get into a little bit later. But if you're like me, you might be a little surprised. I was thinking that it'd be an IR sensor.
Yeah.
Right. Not a sensor. I'm sorry. An IR emitter.
Right.
And that the sensor itself would be on your television. You know, that you have a sensor bar that you put above the TV.
As it turns out, it doesn't really sense.
No, it's emitting.
Yes.
So it turns out that that it's swapped around, right? I thought, because when you think of a remote control, when you press a button, you think, oh, I'm sending a signal to the television or to the, you know, whatever, the cable box. And that the cable box is a receiver, and so that's how that's working. No, it's the other way around with the Wii remote. The remote itself is the sensor, and the sensor bar is actually the transceiver. It's transmitter, actually, not transceiver, but a transmitter.
Right.
So you've got at the end of your Wii remote this sensor that detects infrared signals. And that's, again, we'll get into it, but that's kind of the secret behind Wii hacks and why the Wii remote has become very a very useful tool for hackers.
Let's see. What else? It's got four little blue LEDs in there to tell you whether you're player one, two, three, or four.
Right. The buttons, of course, are on little sensors. So every time you press a button, that activates the sensor. And when you get down to the point of taking a Wii remote apart, there are a lot of buttons there. It's 12 buttons total, and four of those would be the direction pad. Now, a lot of people just think of the direction pad as a single unit, but yeah, technically it's four buttons.
Yeah.
It's got an expansion port. It's got the port for the nunchuck plug.
Or Wii Motion Plus.
Or Wii Motion Plus.
It's a proprietary 6-pin plug.
Right.
That's Nintendo's own.
It's got memory.
Yes, it does have memory. It's got 5.5 kilobytes of onboard flash memory, which is good for storing your Mii if you're going to take your Mii with you as you go to a friend's house to play.
Right.
Just a little bit of information there. It doesn't store lots and lots of data.
Right. There's the speaker. We mentioned that earlier.
Yes.
So that you actually can get sound out of the Wii remote. So if you're playing something like a Star Wars game and you fire up that lightsaber, you get the nice little wow noises coming straight from your controller and not from necessarily just the TV. It has a Bluetooth chip.
Yes, it does have a Bluetooth chip.
Which is another reason why hackers like it so much, because it makes it easy to connect to various PC programs that have a Bluetooth-enabled component.
It's the Broadcom 2042 chip. It's not 100% human interface design compliant, which means you might, if you are going to try hacking the Wii remote yourself, you might have some difficulty connecting it to a computer, although according to what Lee said, it's probably the hardest part of actually doing a lot of work with it is getting it to connect with a particular computer. It sort of depends on the computer, I think, and whether or not you can detect it easily or not. That does help out in the hacking department.
I forgot about one other component that you would notice if you were looking at the circuit board.
Okay.
A capacitor.
Ah, yes.
There's a actually quite large capacitor on the end opposite of the IR sensor.
Mm-hmm.
The capacitor probably provides some power to things like the accessories that you can plug into the base of the Wii Remote. For example, again, the nunchuck, which on its own does not have any battery power. It draws all its power from, or does it have battery power? Now I can't remember. It's been so long since I've used my Wii.
The Wii Remote?
The nunchuck device.
The nunchuck doesn't have a battery on board.
I didn't think it did, but as soon as I said it, I was like, whoa, wait, if I'm wrong about that, people are going to write in.
Yes, they will.
It's been so long. This shows how long it's been since I've used my Wii Remote.
Well, I do have in my notes that the connector is a proprietary. Oh, I said that. But it does provide 3.3 volts of power and 400 kilohertz of 12C serial communication.
Okay. So that's where the nunchuck is drawing its energy from. The battery provides the power to the capacitor. The capacitor can provide power to the nunchuck. Also, I mean, the nunchuck's going to draw power from the Wii Remote's batteries as well.
Yeah. And if you are using batteries, instead of a rechargeable battery of some type, you know, like they have the third party and the battery packs that you can actually plug in and battery your charging stations.
Right.
But if you were using just a standard pair of AA batteries, you're going to get about 20 to 40 hours of battery life.
Yeah, that's not terrible.
No,
I mean, when you think about it, I mean, considering, the sort of functions that you're using this Wii Remote for.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're using the Wii Remote for something static, like you're using the Wii Remote as a detector, the way a lot of hacking projects use it, it probably will last longer than if you were to, you know, use it in as a full video game controller, because then you're activating the accelerometer, the rumble pack, all that kind of stuff,
mm-hmm.
and that's going to drain more power than if it's just being used as a sensor.
Right. Now, where should we go from here?
Well, I figured that is exactly how it works. You're talking about, again, the sensor bar has the LED lights inside it, so it's a transmitter, not really a sensor.
Oh, we should point out the function of the sensor bar, because somebody might say, hey, you know, it's got all that stuff inside the controller. Why do you need the sensor bar?
Okay.
The sensor bar helps orient the Wii Remote and the Wii, so the Wii knows pretty much where the player is.
Right.
You know, if you start anybody who has a Wii, and especially in someone who has someone like me who has a pretty small living room, you'll find that if you step close to the TV, suddenly your Wii may go, wait a minute, where did you go?
Right.
Well, it's the sensor bar and the camera on the Wii Remote are basically telling the Wii roughly where you are.
Right.
And if you make a sudden shift forward or backward, suddenly the Wii might take a minute to reorient you, and that's what that lag time is the sensor bar and the IR camera basically figuring out what happened to you.
And the Wii Motion Plus takes care of a lot of that. That
does help.
That helped quite a bit so that it could give more accuracy as far as depth goes.
Mm-hmm.
The sensor bar has actually got lights inside it. LED infrared lights. So
yes.
We're not talking visible lights. It's outside the visible spectrum. But they're constantly sending light out, and the sensor at the end of the Wii Remote picks up that light, and that's what, and through the Bluetooth chip can transmit to the Wii the orientation of the remote based upon things like the accelerometer and how much of the light it's sensing from the sensor bar.
Yeah.
Now, if you were to decide to hack this, you're looking mostly at the Wii Remote as your device. You know, you don't even need the Wii anymore.
Mm-hmm.
If you're talking about a hack job where you want to use the Wii Remote as a sensor,
mm-hmm.
what you would need is some sort of either reflective tape or an LED IR light, infrared light. So an infrared LED, we're not talking about your average LEDs that light up red or green or blue or whatever. It would be lighting up in the infrared spectrum.
Uh-huh.
Now, I've seen some really cool applications for this.
Okay.
The one in the article was actually pretty neat, where it's talking about using an LED marker. So it looks like a marker, like a Sharpie marker.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But it has an LED infrared light at the end of it. And then you could project on a screen, a projected whiteboard, and you could write on the whiteboard with the LED light.
Very cool.
That's pretty nifty.
Yep.
But the one that I really like was a Wii Theremin.
A Wii Theremin?
Yeah.
Interesting. So I haven't seen that one.
It was a Theremin where a Theremin, if you aren't familiar, is this wacky musical instrument that you usually play by having you have a pair of sensors, really. Mm-hmm. And as you get closer and further away from them, you can adjust the pitch and volume of a sound. And it's that weird, like, wah, wah, wah noise you hear in the old, like, 1950s B science fiction movies.
It almost, in some ways, it reminds me of a saw, people playing a saw.
Right.
But you can identify the difference. I mean, it sounds electric. There is a difference in. But the eeriness of it sort of reminds me of a saw, what it's like.
And our keen-eared listeners will pick up on the Stephen King reference I just threw in there.
Oh, yes.
It's the idea of the traditional theremin is by moving your hands further, closer, further away, or mm-hmm. up and down these various bars, you can make this weird sound. Well, it's kind of a similar idea with the Nintendo Wii hack. The Wii remote acts as the sensor, and you use a pair of gloves where the guy who did this hack, he used a pair of gloves and he put an LED light at the tip of the forefinger mm-hmm. of each of the gloves.
Okay.
All right. And then by orienting his hands, he could move one LED up, and that would be the I think it was the volume, and he could move the other LED closer or further away from the Wii remote, and that ended up being the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And so he created a virtual theremin.
Awesome.
Which, if you've ever looked into the plans for building a theremin, these things are fiendishly complicated. They are not easy to build. I know a guy who did build one, and it took him quite a while to do it because mm-hmm. it's a pretty complicated build. But by using some software I think the guy actually wrote the software,
mm-hmm.
who created the hack. And this I saw on YouTube. I just did a YouTube where I think I was searching theremins at the time, and I saw this cool Wii remote hack. But using the Wii remote as the sensor, it's the one that's picking up where the LED lights are coming from. And then running that through this software, he was able to create the theremin, the virtual theremin.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I've seen quite a few Wii instrument type hacks. The guy who had created this entire percussion ensemble,
mm-hmm.
where different kinds of instruments, where he had it was really involved, lots and lots of servos and other little robotic things used to strike the drums, he had it set up where he could use the Wii remote to control what would be played at what time, and it was mm-hmm. very, very fascinating. Mm-hmm. There's a quite a few videos on YouTube like that, I'm curious, why would somebody bother? If these parts are basically off the shelf parts, why would you say that people actually bother taking the time to hack the Wii remote instead of going to get an accelerometer and, you know, the LEDs to do this?
Well, it's already made for you. That's a big thing.
So it's essentially like going to, for example, the Maker Shed and getting an Arduino board, and, you know, it's already, you've got the components that you need to do it. And all you have to do is pull it apart and do what you're going to do with it?
That's part of it,
okay.
I think. But I think another part, I mean, you've already, like I said, you've already got the components put together. You've got the Bluetooth component, which is a big part of it.
Yeah.
You've got the infrared sensor there, and it's already all wired together in a circuit board.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in a very compact format, and it's cheap.
Yeah.
You know, it's already put together in a relatively cheap way. We've talked a little bit about some industries, like, say, the virtual reality industry, although mm-hmm. it's most people tend to call it virtual environments now, or
sure.
they call it something totally different. Well, it's hard to get funding for virtual reality and virtual environment projects.
Mm-hmm.
The public perception of virtual reality was not accurate back when the term really took off in the 90s,
mm-hmm.
right? Because we all heard about virtual reality, and we all heard that we were going to be living in this virtual space. And once people found out what what how far along virtual reality actually was, the bottom dropped out of it because it did not live up to what our expectations were because a few people kind of overhyped it.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, those projects lost a lot of support, and it became more and more difficult to get funding for those projects, even though the work was still very much very important.
Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't as far along as everyone thought it was.
Yeah.
Well, industries like the virtual reality industry started turning toward the video game industry for a lot of their their equipment.
Yeah.
They just cannibalize whatever they could out of the video game industry. And the Wiimote is a good example of that.
Mm-hmm.
You can use the Wiimote to create a kind of virtual environment. A good example actually that's in that article that you mentioned,
mm-hmm,
was a pair of glasses that allowed you to create a parallax view of a virtual environment,
mm-hmm,
where you would put essentially you have a pair of glasses, and on either side of the glasses would be one of these LED emitters, infrared, right, emitters.
Mm-hmm.
You'd use the Wii remote as the sensor. You would build a virtual environment, and you would link the Wii remote to the virtual environment. You put on a pair of glasses, so you're viewing the virtual environment.
Mm-hmm.
And as you turn your head, because the Wii remote catches the LEDs and finds the different orientation, would change your view of the virtual environment as you turn your head. So it's like you're looking into a 3D environment.
Huh.
So, you look at a flat screen, but you turn your head left or right, and because the orientation of the lights is different with the Wii remote, it changes your view on the screen, and it looks like a 3D environment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's pretty cool. I've actually seen that kind of displayed once before. It's a little hard to explain. There are videos on YouTube of this effect. It's a pretty cool, very simple virtual reality implementation.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the sort of thing that the VR experts really get excited about because it's much more affordable and it's really accessible. It's not like there's only one of these devices in the world. You can just run down to an electronics store and buy one.
Mm-hmm.
Buy a Wii remote off the shelf, and then with some software and a little hacking, then you're done. You've got yourself a virtual reality machine.
Yep. And I was thinking too that the other factor that plays into this is the hacking factor, which is the idea that you're taking something that already exists apart and doing something with it that was not originally intended.
Oh yeah.
Which just adds to the fun of doing that.
That's the classic hacking ethos.
Yes.
I mean, that goes way back before computers even, talking about like hacking the telephone system, where you create ways of making it do things that it wasn't meant to do.
We should totally do a podcast on that.
Oh, about phone freaks?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we could do that. That's a good example. All right, write it down.
Okay.
In a future podcast, we will talk about phone freaking.
Okay.
Steve Jobs will feature heavily in that, I'm sure.
Maybe we can get Woz on the phone.
That'd be awesome.
Well, we've already talked about Project Natal in previous podcasts.
Right.
But we haven't really gotten into the latest developments on the Sony Move. Like, for example, we actually have a name for it now.
Right. We used to call it just the wand.
Yeah. Well, it looks sort of like a wand. It's got a glowing ball on one end, but
right,
it will officially make its debut this fall. The kit's going to cost $100. It'll have a game in it and a camera. It also uses a camera to help capture movement, more like Natal than the Wii, which is sort of backwards from that.
Right. Right.
But
where the camera is on the device end, like the television end, rather than on the controller end.
Yeah. But people seem, especially the PlayStation 3 fans, the hardcore fans, seem pretty excited about it. Going to be able to do motion controller work with a lot of the games. And it too will also have another sub controller for the other hand. You'll be able to use both hands, not just the one,
right,
when you're playing PlayStation 3 games. But interesting how this all has moved so rapidly and has become such an important part of console gaming and even computer gaming, because now that people are doing that and using the motion sensing capabilities of these different components.
Yeah, I think Sony and Microsoft both, I mean, they both clearly had these projects in development before the Wii debuted, because I mean, these are long-term projects. They're not something that you just turn around very quickly. Mm-hmm. However, I think that the success, especially the early success of the Wii, probably put them on the fast track in Sony and Microsoft's case. One of the interesting things I noticed about Project Natal, I just did a quick look to see if, more information about it, just sort of the stuff that we figured out since the unveiling at E3 last year. Which would be 2009.
It's been pretty quiet, really.
Yeah.
At least to the consumer.
But the, one of the interesting things I saw was, I read up on how the brain interprets it's what Microsoft refers to as the brain, Natal's brain, not the human brain, but how the Natal brain interprets motion and your posture in order to transfer that into a in-game action. Mm-hmm. Essentially what it does is when the camera is pointing at you, Natal software is scanning your body and matching it with a database of virtual skeletons.
Really?
Yeah. There's this whole database of different skeletons that it has within its memory, and it kind of matches you to the one that it thinks it fits you the best. It looks at your form and then says, okay, this point here, that's a hand. That point over there, that's the other hand. This must be an elbow. That must be a shoulder. There's like 30 different points that it matches up to a virtual skeleton. So, because it doesn't automatically know. It's not like the camera magically knows that your hand is your hand. It's interpreting it based upon previous information. And the more you use the Natal feature, the more it kind of figures out, I thought that was his hand. Turns out this is actually his hand. Right? Because, it doesn't know automatically.
Right. No,
it's not doesn't magically understand. We're all different shapes and sizes. So, and depending on what you're wearing, that might also kind of confuse it. Like a shirt might make it think that your elbow is in one location when in reality it's in another. And when it sees that you bend a certain way, it's like, well, either his arm is broken or his elbow's actually over here. Mm-hmm. So it looks at your body, it compares it to its database of virtual skeletons, it matches you up, and it does this in just a couple of milliseconds. And it has to, because if it didn't, then the games wouldn't work, because it does this 30 times a second.
Wow.
Because as you move, it has to adjust the skeleton.
That makes sense. That's just awfully quick.
Right. Yeah, it's really, really fast. Even so, I've heard people who have used the Natal system, or at least the prototypes, say that there is a perceptible lag. Mm-hmm. It's not a big surprise because it turns out that we can perceive a lag of just a few milliseconds. Mm-hmm. You have to drop that down as low as possible if you want to avoid, like within virtual reality, you got to drop it down because if you don't, you get virtual seasickness.
Oh, okay.
Because as you turn your head and then the virtual environment changes to reflect that. If it's not seamless, it makes you feel a little disoriented. Mm-hmm. And you can actually get motion sickness from virtual reality if it's not matched up close enough. Same thing with Natal. If you see an action on the screen and you react to it, if it's not really fast, then you're gonna get killed in the game.
Yeah.
You see something coming at you and you react, and then in turn, the game has to react to your reaction. If it's not really seamless, then it's going to be a very frustrating gaming experience.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
Yeah, it ends up being a little more of a lag than, say, the Wii Remote. It's not as instant a feedback loop as with the Wii Remote. So.
Okay, then.
Well,
I think that's all I got for the moment.
Yeah, that's all I got, too. So I guess this will take us to a little listener mail. This listener mail comes from Andrew, and Andrew says, "Hey guys, I listened to your amateur radio episode last night, and I'm just curious, what is the purpose of having licenses for different radio frequencies and such? Is it just a way for the government to make some extra cash, or is it dangerous to the environment or people? I'm just curious why it matters whether someone transmits radio signals without a license. What harm is being done besides the government not making money? Thanks, guys." Well, I wrote back to Andrew already, but I thought this might be an interesting thing for our listeners to hear. It's really a matter of just managing all those different radio frequencies. If you're broadcasting over a certain radio frequency within a particular geographic location, let's say it's a radio frequency that doesn't really go that far.
Right.
But within your town, Other people can't really broadcast on that frequency. Or you, if someone already is broadcasting on that frequency, you're essentially creating interference for that person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because you can only really transmit or receive over one frequency at a time. I mean, you can receive from one frequency and transmit over a different one, mm-hmm. and that's how you can have a conversation with somebody. But it's really managing that and making sure that you don't have this cacophony of noises and interference happen over any particular frequency.
Yeah, we talked about how ham radio got its name, and for the people who were basically talking over everyone else, you know, they were the hams who
right.
didn't know what they were doing, and yeah.
And so the license is really so that you understand this kind of stuff. It's for the government to know that you know what you're doing and that you're not going to end up, say, broadcasting over a dedicated bandwidth for something like radio frequencies or television frequencies or emergency frequencies.
Yeah. And that was the point also of having the network.
Right. So that's really the whole point of the licensing, is really to make sure that you know what you're doing and you're not going to end up causing trouble for everybody else. So it's not just an idea of, some sort of money making scheme, because I'm pretty sure the government's not making money hand over fist with licensing fees.
Right.
But good question. If any of you have any questions for us, write us. Our email address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com. And we have an article on howstuffworks.com about the Nintendo Wii. So if you want to learn more about it, I recommend you go there and check it out. And we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. And be sure to check out the new TechStuff blog, now on the HowStuffWorks homepage.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Grand Canyon University's RN to BSN online degree program makes earning your bachelor's in nursing possible. Balance online coursework with local in-person clinicals to position yourself for potential leadership opportunities in the time you have from wherever you are, leaving room for what matters. Achieve your goals with your personalized plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.